Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Hello, everyone. This is Phil Yeager, and welcome to our podcast today called CPA Review and More, where we like to discuss topics about CPA exam and also other topics. Well, today we are going to discuss the CPA exam because we've had a lot of requests for that. And I am happy to have with me today my colleague, my friend, all right, the person I turn to, seriously, when I have questions, all right, Ron Primarosa, one of the most caring people. He deals with the students. He calls them up. He walks them through, all right? You know, you don't find that really any place that I know of. I don't know anybody else that does that. All right, Ron, what's going on? We have this virus going around, and obviously it's affected Prometrics, all right? What's the latest you've heard on Prometrics?
I've heard all kinds of stories, Phil, from our candidates, and they vary by state, obviously, due to stage one, stage two, stage three, et cetera. So I feel sorry for the candidates because it's tough at the moment, right? Because you're starting and stopping.
Right.
So when to study, when to really focus. You know, you had a study plan all set up. Now you got to change it. You're delaying a little bit. So, you know, it takes a lot of character, Phil, at the moment to continue plugging away, right? And studying like you should be studying these exams. But I also look at it as a positive, Phil, because actually what has happened now, to some extent, Phil, as you know, is people have more time, right, to study for their parts of the exam. So we should look at this as a positive for our candidates. And that's what I've been telling the ones I've been speaking with is you should view this. So you have a few more extra weeks now to study, take advantage of it, right? Focus on weak areas that you have identified and, you know, get those under control as you get ready to take your exam part, whatever that might be. Let's emphasize the positives today. I think a positive is more time to study, okay, for a part, especially if you're studying for FAR, right, which, as we know, is the part that that takes the longest and has the most material to cover in order to pass that particular part of the exam. And I want to point out to you, Phil, I did something very interesting today, which I should do more often, which is to sit down with a simulation question from the AICPA website, you know, which is provided to the candidates free of charge, and do it together with the candidates and a candidate for the exam and go through their thought process as they process, right, a simulation question which has multiple exhibits, Phil. And we know that's very challenging, right, Phil? When you have a simulation, it's got 8 or 10 or even 12 exhibits, right, up on the top of the screen. How do you go through those exhibits? How do you decipher those exhibits? How do you make the entries or make the adjustments or whatever it is that's required as a result of evaluating those exhibits, okay? So I think that's another thing for candidates. I think we cannot emphasize how important it is to practice on the simulations, your thought process, your evaluation process, making decisions, right? Even if they're wrong, make a decision, okay, on a particular item in an exhibit, put the entry down, move on to the next item, and make sure that you sit back and really think about all the concepts you've studied and that you're applying them as best as you can when you go through these very challenging simulation questions.
The financial accounting simulation that's on the AICPA.org website, realistically, all right, you were going through this with this student of ours, but how long does it really take? I mean, seriously, I mean, what did it require? 10 responses or something?
Very close to 10 responses.
Right. Well, how long did it take to do 10 responses,
realistically? Well, again, I was working together with that student. But, you know, Phil, I have to say, honestly, to get 80% of it right, or 90% of it right, or whatever, I think it took us at least 20 minutes, Phil, to do that. At least
so
20
that's
minutes.
All 20 minutes?
Well, 20 minutes, but of course, you know.
You were helping him.
Yeah, I'm helping the candidate along, okay? So what I told the candidate today is I want them to not only go back and do that simulation again themselves, right, from beginning to end and time themselves, but go on to another simulation question, right, that has 10 or 12 exhibits or 8 exhibits, whatever it is, time themselves, and then check on their answer and see what percentage they got of it correct, okay? You know, but the important thing, Phil, right there is managing your time, right? Managing your time, you know, focusing on your strengths in the question. You know, you're probably not going to know every item in there, right? What the theory is, what the proper application is. And in this one simulation question I was doing, Phil, today, it was very important not to forget the income tax effects of the adjustments you were making, right? Because every time you made an adjustment to the income statement, you either had to increase income tax expense or decrease it, right? And you should be doing that as you're making the entries and proceeding through the simulation, right? Rather than saying, well, I'll come back to it later. You know, I'll remember that adjustment for taxes for that item later, right? And then when later comes, Phil, right, you're gonna forget it, right? You're not gonna remember. Though you might be taking notes if you're lucky enough to have been given a sheet of paper with a pencil, right, to keep some notes as you were doing it at the Prometric Center. What if you forgot, okay? And then all that work you've just been through to do your best on that simulation is going to be wasted, right? And you're not going to get your maximum credit on that item.
Are the responses or the questions they ask on these simulations, are they independent of each other, or do they, in other words, if you miss the second response, it'll affect whether you get the third or fourth correct?
Some are dependent and some are independent, okay, Phil? Good question. Like the one I did today with the candidate had questions related to R&D expense, right? What should be expense versus what should be capitalized, or what should be reclassified in different lines in the income statement. It had disposal of a segment, including the segment's profits and also the profit gained on the disposal of the segment. Then it also had calculating interest expense on debt tied to the LIBOR interest rate. It also had revenue recognition, Phil, with regards to FOB destination and FOB shipping point, right? Whether or not it should be recognized or not, and actually you had to reverse it. So these were all independent, but then the dependent part, Phil, was the income tax expense portion, right, of making that adjustment. So you increase profits, you decrease profits, you come down to profit before tax, you have to make a tax adjustment, right, related to all the adjustments combined. So that was a combination, what I just described to you. And no, the further you get along in that problem, right, you can get really tied up quickly and make a lot of mistakes as you're doing the questions.
How are you supposed to know what the LIBOR interest rate is?
Actually, it gave, in this question on the CPA, it gave you the LIBOR rate. Actually, this company had to pay LIBOR plus a spread, okay? So the LIBOR rate was 1.5%, and the spread they had to pay over a LIBOR was 2%. So you would multiply 3.5% times the amount of the borrowings, right, in order to calculate the interest expense. And then they made you compare that calculation to the general ledger recorded amount for interest expense. And if it was wrong, you have to make an adjusting entry, right? And by the way, the adjusting entry was not only for the income statement, but also the balance sheet, right? Because that's an accrual. So, you know, increase interest expense, increase accrued interest payable at the same time. So, yeah, the information was all there. But also, Phil, in some of the exhibits tied to the other exhibits. So there was one exhibit that showed how much debt was borrowed, and then another exhibit gave you the LIBOR information. Okay, so really you have to be smart enough to look at the names of the exhibits, tie those exhibits together, and there's also always another exhibit called Other Information, Phil, right? We're familiar with that, called Other Information. You might find a third piece of information that you need on that third exhibit, right, in order to calculate the adjustments.
How many exhibits did they give on that simulation?
On that particular one, there were 8 exhibits.
Now, how are you supposed to go from one exhibit to the other exhibit to the other exhibit? You have to basically know what you're looking for, right?
Yeah, so what we decided to do with this candidate, what the candidate decided to do, which I thought was great, is he said, let's just start with revenues. And let's, because that's the top line of the income statement, and let's find any exhibits that look like they pertain to revenue, okay? So we went there. One of the exhibits said something about a shipment at the end of the year. So we said, that's logical. Let's check that out. And right away, we get to the adjustment needed to revenues, okay? Revenues and cost of goods sold. And by doing that, right, you get off to a good start. You gain confidence, right, that you know what you're doing on that simulation question. And then you move to the next line item on the income statement. Is there anything related to inventory or cost of goods sold, right?
Then so just do me a favor, start with that again. How do you approach that simulation?
Well, the simulation had a big income statement on it, okay? It has the adjusted trial balance, then an adjustments column, and then the final adjusted trial balance column. And then on the top of the simulation are all the exhibits, and the first one was revenues, right? Revenue shipments at the end of the year, okay? So press that revenue exhibits at the end of the year, open it up, and it described a shipment to a customer at the end of the year made on December 31, where the customer didn't receive it until January 4th of the following year. But you have to be careful there too, Phil, because there were actually copies of two emails. The first email you scroll down to said it was shipped FOB destination. The second email, which was the top email, said the equipment was shipped December 31 and received January 4th. And then it also told you the revenue was recorded as of December 31. Well, you know, right, Phil, under FOB destination, if you ship December 31 and the customer receives it January 4 on FOB destination, you can't record revenue, right, until January 4. So right away, you come to the first adjusting entry, and then you make the adjusting entry in the worksheet that they provide you. Okay, in that case.
You know, I have people, I'm sure, I don't know, I probably talk to them more than you do, you know, who've gone to other courses that fail two times, three times, and they say, all right, what should I do? I'm failing. And I always ask them this, all right, did you use the blueprints? And, you know, sometimes they'll know what it is, sometimes they don't. And my, you know, the simulation you were just talking about, could you say that every topic was one of the blueprints, or it's hard to remember?
No, everyone was, Phil. No doubt about it. Research and development, blueprint. Revenue recognition, definitely. Blueprint. Disposal of a segment, blueprint. Okay. Income taxes, blueprint. Okay. There was not one item in there that was not in our book, in our books too, by the way, as a blueprint with the explanations underneath it. Not one. Nothing.
People say, I took this other course, but I know friends who passed it, you know, and they never used the blueprints, all right?
Yeah.
What's the response to that? Doesn't that kill my argument? You have to use the blueprints?
Well, you know, the blueprints are there for a reason, right? Phil, you always ask the VP of examinations, right, at the AICPA, if a candidate comes to you and calls you tomorrow, hey, Mike, what do you think is the best way to study for the exam? The automatic answer is, Phil, study the blueprints. Why would you study things that are not in the blueprint that are not going to be on the exam, right? Why waste your time and your mind and
well, it all comes down to money, and I hear this, all right? My company gave me that course, all right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to use it. And they admit to me they keep failing with it. And I say, well, wait a minute, it's not working. Well, let me try it a few more times. You know, I mean, I don't know what they're thinking. But here's the problem. They don't want to pay for anything new because they didn't pay for the first course in the first place. I try to explain to them it's an investment. And, you know, I don't know if they see it. You know, I'm finding a lot of people, no matter what you tell them, they don't seem to hear you. I don't know if they don't want to hear it or they just, you know, they don't seem to get the picture and the message. All right. But the ones who do, you know, eventually will pass and they immediately blame themselves. I've never seen anything like it. They blame themselves for failing. And I always say, if you don't have the right material to study from, maybe that's the reason you're failing, not because you're doing anything wrong. So anyway, with that, let's talk about, you really are the expert, if I may say that. And by the way, you can pat yourself on the back now. You are the expert in BEC and auditing. And also Ron is very knowledgeable in financial accounting. But because he doesn't want to be a hog and take all the exam to go over by himself, he says, Phil, you can help the financial, all right, but I'll help if they need it. And, of course, he doesn't want to do regulation. He doesn't know taxes. Well, you probably do know taxes. And also the business law, all right. And Ron's very nice about that, and It makes me feel, you know, my head swells.
And governmental, Phil, and not for profit.
Oh, governmental. Oh, God.
Hopeless.
I actually taught that last week, the not for profit.
I know. So I'm hopeless there.
Talk to students, okay?
Yeah.
All right. What parts do they call you about? Let's take BEC first.
Well, BEC, right? Phil, the biggest part is standard costs, cost accounting, everything to do with cost accounting. You know why that is, Phil? I remember when I took my first cost accounting course, I hated it. Okay. I couldn't stand it. It was one course, never saw it again, right? But then, of course, I went into auditing, and naturally, I'm working on manufacturers, right, that are using cost accounting tools, terminology, standard costs, and everything else. Then I realized how important it was, okay, especially in manufacturing-related businesses, right? Anything, or in service, right? You can use cost accounting very well these days in service, warranty-related businesses, et cetera. So, Phil, I would say the biggest topic of questions I get, and that's one almost complete section of BEC, relates to anything to do with cost accounting, job costing.
Let's talk about specific areas, okay?
Yeah.
How about the different variances, the material, the labor?
Yeah, so they get confused, you know, they get confused on the variances, okay, right away, okay? So, you know, on material variances, right, you have purchase price variance when you purchase, and then you have usage variance when you use, okay? On direct labor, you have price variance, right, on labor rates, and then you also have usage variances, okay? Then on overhead variances, variable, you have spending variance, and again, you have efficiency. And then on fixed, you have spending variances, and then you have the basic fixed overhead variances, okay? Volume, they call it, volume variances, okay? So, and then students confuse that with job costing, okay? So let's differentiate between job costing and standard costing. On job costing for jobs, Phil, you trace direct materials and direct labor directly to jobs. That should be pretty easy.
A specific job, right?
Very specific job.
Right.
So that should be easy to trace, right?
Okay.
You know, whether you're using barcoding or not, you know, if you have any type of bookkeeping system, QuickBooks, whatever it is, you can do it, okay? The difficulty on job costing is how to allocate overhead, okay? And in job costing, we don't really care too much about whether it's variable or fixed overhead. It's just a pool of overhead costs, right? So the key with job costing is to identify a denominator, right, Phil, which is an activity level. That could be machine hours, that can be direct labor hours, something that is driving the generation of overhead costs, all right? So that's the denominator. And the numerator is an estimate of what the overhead cost will be for a period, okay? The problem is in job costing, when you close a job, right, when you build a home, it's not always going to be completed on the end of the month, okay? Could be the middle of the month, the beginning of the month, toward the end of the month. You want to close the job, right, and evaluate your profitability. Well, it's easy to do on a building a house for labor and materials, but for overhead, you need to use an allocation of the overhead to that particular each house you build so you can close the job and do a preliminary analysis of your profitability, right, on that particular job. And that's where I get a lot of questions from candidates, Phil, confusing the overhead allocation technique of job costing to the overheads related to standard costing, which are much more
well,
precise.
Is standard costing another name for process costing?
No.
What is process cost?
Okay, well, yeah, that's another subject. So on mass production, Phil, right? So let's say you're producing Hershey Kisses, right? Or steel, it doesn't matter what it is, Tupperware, plastic. There are two costing techniques you can use. One is called the weighted average approach, right? Where you basically take all your costs for the period and divide it by your equivalent units of production. Or you can use the FIFO method, okay, of process costing. So both of those are actually, Phil, process costing methods, okay? One is weighted average and one is FIFO. And
may I say one thing there?
Yeah.
You should know how to calculate equivalent finished units, right?
Absolutely. Phil, yeah. I get so many questions on equivalent units and the ability to calculate the under the weighted average method versus the FIFO method, okay? And let's explain that quickly. The FIFO method, all that matters is what did you complete during this period? What did you do this period. It doesn't consider what came in from the previous period like weighted average does, okay? So I just got a mobile choice question from a candidate last night, and I'm trying my best to try to explain to him the difference between calculating equivalent units under the weighted average method versus the FIFO method, okay? And the exam will test that, Phil. God forbid, might even be in a simulation, okay? But that is a very important topic to be able to understand.
Now, on BEC, do they have trouble with the economics area?
I don't get many questions, Phil, believe it or not, in economics, and thank goodness, because that's not one of my strengths, to be honest, okay? I did get one, interestingly, last night from a candidate of ours in Virginia asking me about supply and demand. So I just used the oil, what happened in the oil field, right, recently, where he was trying to understand what happens on supply and demand. So as we all know, Russia and Saudi Arabia, right, just flooded the market with oil, right? Well, what happened? The price of oil dropped negative, right? Because the supply was 100 times the demand, also because of the Verona, the coronavirus. The coronavirus problem we're all going through, right? Gasoline consumption right now is in the 60s, from the 1960s. In the United States. So I use that as a way to explain the impact of supply and demand. But I don't get many questions on economics. Most of the students seem to understand the demand curves, the demand supply curves, equilibrium, you know, how the Federal Reserve works, these type of things, okay? I don't get a sense of a lot of issues there.
What's other area? Finance?
Finance, yes. Definitely in finance, yep.
They have trouble with that?
Yeah, well, again, they had it in the cost accounting course, right? Generally, it's like the last two or three weeks.
They may have had it.
Yeah. And they may have had it in a separate finance course, right? A basic fundamentals of finance. But they forget the capital asset pricing model, right? They forget a lot of the calculations that are required on how to calculate interest and the effect of interest and what happens in an inflationary period with the, you know, with the curve and inflation and actions that the Fed takes and how that affects interest rates. So, and, you know, actually, Phil, it's tough for the candidates today because we've been through a very unusual period, right? The last 10 years, starting with the banking crisis until today. I mean, you and I are not used to interest rates being zero, okay, or 1%. And, you know, in the old days, right, in the Reagan Carter days, we had interest rates at 20%, remember? 15-20%.
Oh, yes, I do. 18% for a mortgage. I remember that.
Remember that? And very high rates of inflation. So, but for students, it's a little bit difficult to relate to that because they haven't been through those times like we have been in the past. But, you know, I would say those are the major topics, Phil, in BEC.
Now, you discovered what you need to do to get the points for the written communication. Can you tell?
I have a little secret formula there, Phil, and I copy you.
I keep it down just between us, Ron.
Okay.
Good.
So, actually, Phil, I stole it, the first part of it, I stole it from your conversation with Mike Decker, because you said to Mike, hey, Mike, written communication questions are 15% of the BEC grade. What is the secret, Mike, to doing well on the written communication questions? And from your conversation with them, I produced a document. Those candidates that are listening to us now should email us. I'll be happy to provide it to you on what he believed was the secret, okay? And basically it comes to, of course, you have to be able to write, right? And you should be able to write at this point in your life or in your career that you're in, but also the way you organize that question, okay? With an introduction paragraph, the middle paragraph has your alternative solutions to the problem that you're presented, in this case, particular short case study. And then finally, a very neat summarized conclusion, Phil, okay? And what I have, Phil, and we provide it to our candidates, not only in our materials, but also upon special request, is we have some very nice written communication questions that they can practice on. And then we can critique it for the candidates and give them an idea and then have them compare their submission, right, or their draft of a submission to a written communication question to what we would recommend as a solution to that question. So let me give you an example, Phil. A good written communication question might be your boss, who's the CEO, comes up to you one day and says, should we delay paying our accounts payable? Right now we're paying them in 30 days. Should we delay paying them until, let's say, 90 days, okay, and borrow the money? Or should we continue paying them on a 30-day basis? And what are the ramifications of each one of those decisions? That could be a written communication question, okay? So in that written communication, right, it's a memo. It's to the boss, the CEO, and subject is accounts payable policy, okay? And you kind of outline in the first paragraph, you've asked me to do so-and-so, right, to analyze the difference between continuing to pay vendors in 30 days or to pay them in 90 days and borrow money from our bank on our line of credit, for example, okay? Then in the middle paragraph, you outline to your boss what are the ramifications of each, right? If we pay within 30 days, for example, we might be able to take advantage of more discounts that were provided by our suppliers, right, for quick payments, and that can save us a lot of money over time, okay? On the other side, though, if we pay within 30 days, we have to make sure we have the cash flow, right, and the working capital in order to make those payments, okay? As opposed to going out to 90 days, right, well, that conserves cash flow and working capital, right, and also reduces the amount of borrowings the company has to make and the associated interest expense, but that might put us in trouble, right, with our vendors, right, who say, well, you know, you guys are paying in 90 days now instead of 30 days. Therefore, we have to increase our prices to you to compensate for that difference, right, in 30 days versus 90 days. So if you can explain all of this, Phil, as an example, in a written communication question, you're going to maximize your credit on it, okay? And on the BEC part of the exam, there are three written communication questions. Two of them count, okay, out of the three. Please do not gamble, candidates, on which one will count and which one will not count, okay? And do your best on all three. But I think it's important for you have to sit there, read the question, read the case you're given. It's generally just a few sentences. Organize your thoughts, right? Start to think about how you're going to approach the question and then do the model I just said, okay? Nice introduction paragraph, middle paragraph with lots of substance in it and body in it, and then a very good conclusion paragraph with a recommendation and why, okay? And remember, Phil, this is all computer graded, right? So the better organized your written communication submission is, and using spell check at the end of it too, right, to eliminate any spelling errors, the better you're going to score on these written communication questions.
Isn't the program at the on ProMetrics, isn't that check for spelling?
Yes, it has spell check within the program. So, you know, and, you know, these are, you don't want to lose a lot of points, right, Phil, in the written communication questions. I mean, this should be something you really maximize that 15%, which could be the difference, right, between getting to 75 to pass BEC or not pass BEC.
Auditing. You get calls about auditing. What are the areas that give people most problems on auditing?
Auditing is another tough one, Phil, because a lot of the calls I get are from people that are really not working in auditing. You know, after they get out of school, they're in tax or they're in advisory services, not really related to auditing subjects. I think the big problem now starts, Phil, with the audit opinions, okay? Which audit opinion are you required to issue for publicly listed companies depending on the circumstance you are given in that question or simulation, okay? And as we know, right, that ranges from an unqualified opinion, right, where the audit has gone very well and there's no problems that have been encountered during the audit with any material items in the financial statements, to going concern opinions, right, where there's doubt as to whether or not the company that you're auditing is going to be able to continue as a going concern opinion. And the peekaboo, or the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, has changed the requirements for publicly listed company audit reports recently to emphasize in the audit report critical audit matters, Phil, CAMs, okay? Critical audit matters. So now, for the candidates listening, you should go to Microsoft's most recent annual report and read the auditor's report, where they talk right in the report, Phil, what they identified during the audit as a critical audit matter, okay? Accounts receivable, inventories, software accounting, these type of issues, okay? That has to be now all discussed directly as part of the audit report, which the auditors provide, which is now publicly, you know, disseminated as part of the annual report. Okay, so, you know, I think what we're, and then for non-public companies, Phil, we're still relying on AICPA standards, you know, based on the old opinions and the way the auditors' reports have been generated. Okay, but of course, I think soon in the future they will morph more toward what the PCAOB is requiring as far as the content of these audit reports. So I think the confusion there, Phil, is qualified reports, unqualified reports, disclaimer reports, going concern reports. When do you issue those, okay? What's significant? What's material? And when do you draw that line as to when you have to issue those certain different type of opinions? And if, you know, Phil, it's a tough question, right? Because unless you're an audit manager, right, or an audit partner, right, whose job it is to do that every day, right, the exam is testing to an audit senior level, right? And, you know, that's a tough thing for people to grasp, right, even if they're audit assistants or audit seniors, right, is what opinion should we issue, right, after doing all this audit work? It's sort of seeing the forest through the trees, right? You know, type of situation. Not easy.
Are you saying that if you're not in auditing, you can't pass auditing?
No, not saying that, because we get a lot of our candidates through auditing, okay? It's a matter, as usual, right, Phil, of studying the blueprints, studying the right materials, right? You know, in areas where you're weak, like I am with reg or not-for-profit or taxation, you know, those areas, if I have to study them, I'm going to put in twice as much time, right, to make sure I understand it, do a lot of practice questions and simulations until I understand the materials, okay, and also take advantage of a CPA review service like at Jaeger, right, where you can get in touch with people like us, right, to ask questions. And I think that's the best part of our job, right, Phil, is when a candidate comes to us and says, you know, please, Phil, Dr. Phil, I just don't understand this tax question. I've seen the question. I've read the solution. It doesn't make sense to me. Please explain this to me in a manner that I can explain it. And that's the difference, Phil, between us and a lot of the other providers. And that's what helps a candidate who doesn't have experience in certain topics, right, to remember the material so they can apply it when they take the exam.
They were supposed to come out with new blueprints.
Oh, yes. April 1, right?
And they were actually, if I remember correctly, they were mostly auditing blueprints, weren't they?
Yes, and they were mainly on integrating Excel, right, combined with an introduction to data analysis, okay, using Excel. And remember, we attended the webinar that they had, the ICPA, in March, I think it was, or February.
Yeah,
and they kind of demonstrated to us some software. But yeah, that was supposed to start October 1, but we have not heard anything recently. So right now, it doesn't appear like, Phil, there's going to be changes to the auditing exam at this moment through the end of calendar 2020.
And it doesn't seem like there's going to be any changes to anything.
I don't think so, Phil. We haven't seen any blueprint. Yep. No. But we have to encourage our candidates, Phil, stay focused, right? You know, keep studying. For those of you that have conditional parts passed already, don't give up, okay? Keep focused, keep studying. And also remember, starting July 1, right, the AICPA is offering continuous testing, okay? So you don't have to wait for these dreaded windows to come and go, right, Phil? That, as far as we know, has not changed. Matter of fact, we saw recently, right, Phil, they said the continuous testing definitely starts on July 1st. So, you know, please, candidates, keep that in mind as you're doing your planning here in the future.
Just one last thing just came to mind. There aren't a lot of task-based simulations around to practice with, right?
No, that's right.
But all these courses have all of these task-based simulations. Where did they get them from? The Task-Based Simulation Company of America?
I think they're home-baked, Phil. Homemade. Yeah.
And something tells me they're burnt. They don't really help.
And you have to be careful, Phil. Remember I was telling you today on some of the simulation questions I was practicing with a candidate, I had a sense that there were some things kind of missing from them. You know what I mean? And especially when you looked at the solutions, you scratch your head and said, well, you know, imply that from the material I was given. So you got to be very careful with these simulation questions, Phil, I think in general.
And also, don't go buy a course that says we have tens of thousands of multiple choice.
No.
All right?
No.
You don't have to do a lot of multiple choice. That was a quote, once again, from the vice president of examinations, Mike Decker.
Yep.
Just do enough multiple choice, basically, to illustrate the points. But you have to understand the concepts.
Yep. And Phil, be honest about your weak areas. I spent a lot of time, when you introduced me to new candidates to start working with, one of the first things I ask them is, tell me your weak areas. Consolidations, lease accounting, revenue recognition, what is your weakness? I have one candidate, I think I've gone through percentage of completion with them 4 or 5 times, okay? And every time I talk to him, I draw up a new question to see if he or she understands it, okay? So it's very important to identify key weak areas, Phil, right, that are in the blueprints where it's highly possible you're going to get a simulation question, right? So that's going to be a big part of your exam, right? Consolidation. Remember, you did a great presentation one of these Sundays recently for us on consolidations, going through all the entries. I had so many candidates say, oh my God, that was so good to listen to all of the descriptions of the required entries.
Well, thank you, Ron.
Consolidations.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, but you know, if you get that down, right, and you understand it and you get a consolidation question as a sim, you can eat it alive, Phil. You can do so well on it, right? Get an 80 or 90% on it, right, to offset another question where you may have some weaknesses.
Also, let me just share this with you. There have been changes in the tax law due to the CARE Act, all right? They're not going to ask you those things. They definitely won't ask that. First of all, this just happened. These questions have been made up a while ago, all right? So don't get all hung up on these things. Remember, as Ron said, all right, never give up. You can't give up, all right? Giving up is something you'll regret forever, all right? And I'm glad I didn't give up, because I'll tell you, after the first time when I failed, I was ready to say, I'm not going through this. It blew my ego. It really did.
Me too, Phil. Big time. Big time. Big time.
Anyway, I want to thank Ron Primoroso. And by the way, he calls me Dr. Phil. Ron is also a doctor. He's a medical doctor. No, no, Ron holds a PhD from Florida Atlantic University.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, in Fort Lauderdale. And this man, he knows a lot. God, you really do. I listen to you. I'm amazed at what the knowledge you have. So, anyway, Ron, thank you very much for doing this podcast with me. And, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a course that you are using and that course does not have the blueprints, and I don't know any other course that does, all right, don't keep studying with that course, all right? That's like studying with the wrong material. All right, use the blueprints. That's the material. All right, it may cost you a few dollars. We don't overcharge. We don't believe in that. But look at our prices. Look at our specials. All right, please give us a call. You can always reach me, once again, at my phone number, 301-874-4900, extension 6. That's 301-874-4900, extension 6. I am the only person who gives my phone number to students. No one else. Go look at numbers on other courses. All right, that should tell you something about us. And once again, you have a question for Ron, I will get in touch with him. I send him an email, and then he calls you on the phone. The phone, here. Do you remember the phones? We still have these, all right? But he will call you back. We find it's easy to communicate on the phone, right?
Best, Phil. First,
all right, Ron, well,
person to person. It's very important, Phil.
It is. I really think. You got to get personal service.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you very much, everyone, for listening to us. And we hope you got a lot out of this. And on behalf of Ron, I can say, hey, be safe. And don't forget to wash your hands.
Yes, right? Every day. Yes, every possible moment. That's
every
right.
possible moment. Okay? If you can find the soap. All right, Ron. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Phil. Have a good day. Take care.
You too. Thanks, Ron.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.